Episode 7 of the Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. I am Drew.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Sam.
So we have Sam Wallman today, our master barista in training for our cafe at our flagship, The Factory. And Sam is with us because we're talking home roasting, and he is our barista who has the most home roasting experience. So we want to pick his brain and kind of walk through his journey in home roasting. And also try and evaluate some of the home roasting methods out there compared to the roast theory we've learned in mainly Christian's work in roasting green coffee over the last 3.5 years. So to start out, Sam, why don't you just walk us through your experience green roasting? The first time, actually, I met you, you came in for your interview, mm-hmm. and you brought green coffee with you,
yeah.
which was pretty cool. Not everybody does that. You were talking about your experience home roasting. So how did you get started?
I've always had an interest in coffee, and one of the first questions I asked myself was, like, why not me? Or, like, why can't I do this? Or, like, I could do this. So I did a little bit of research, found out that you could buy green coffee online. And so I kind of just took the plunge and ended up getting, I think, like a 5-pound bag of relatively cheap Brazilian coffee. It was still Arabica, but I just kind of wanted to get my feet wet. And so I bought the 5 pounds. I was just using a frying pan at the time. So super, super low tech, like, poor in terms of evenness and temperature control and all those sorts of things. But I got through my first batch and I was really excited. It wasn't awful.
Okay. It's like the first time you try and grill a steak.
Exactly. It wasn't awful, but it was not the most brilliant specimen either. And so that kind of prompted a larger question of how do I improve on this? And that was kind of me realizing my own ignorance in terms of how much theory is behind roasting and what it takes to quality roast. So fast forward like a month or two, I was attempting to then use Whirly Pops, like old school popcorn poppers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the thing about those are you can only do like an 80 gram batch or like, you know, 3 cups of coffee max.
Yeah. Right.
And so having to do that time in and time out, it just got laborious. So I kept on doing the frying pan, occasionally doing the Whirly Pop if I wanted more evenness in the roast itself. But I eventually decided just to kind of make the plunge and get a legitimate roaster. And so I got the Beamore 1600, I think the Plus model. And with it, I got like a 10-pound sampler bag of coffee from Sumatra, Brazil, Kenya, Ethiopia. So I started to just roast those up. And that's really when it like blew my mind. The first bag that I bought, it was on eBay.
Nice. Some guy smuggled it through an airport.
Some coyote.
Exactly. Exactly. The first bag, it was just some guy on eBay. And then I found out more about green coffee purveyors.
Mm-hmm.
And so the second bag that I bought was from these guys called Bodie Leaf Coffee Traders out of Northern California. And they have a Q grader in-house, so they do have some very high-quality stuff. I found that at the time, though, my theory was not strong enough to support their coffee.
Mm.
And so, like, I remember getting a Kenyan AA and then tasting it and be like, this is awful. Like, this is very acidic in, like, the worst way possible. It just completely underdeveloped, nasty, barely out of first crack.
Mm.
And so then I kind of wondered, like, well, is it me or is it, like, the coffee? So I assumed, like, very ignorantly, oh, it's the coffee.
Right.
So
Couldn't be you.
Yeah, no, totally. And so, like, I started looking around, and I was always coming back to Sweet Maria's.
Mm.
And I think they do a tremendous job. They source pretty equitably. The coffee is great. Yeah, and that was kind of the turning point.
And Sweet Maria seems to be one of the most popular sources for people looking to procure just some green coffee for their hobby roasting. The mm-hmm. first guy I met that home roasted, he sourced from Sweet Maria's. He actually used the Fresh Roast SR500.
Yeah.
Which, it's basically popcorn popper on steroids, same basic theory. So when talking about home roasting, there are certain variables that everybody should understand. Things that, Christian, have become kind of like second language to us here. Drop temperature, development time, gas, airflow. But these aren't always variables that people get to watch or play with at home. So can you just kind of walk through the biggest variables that you use when roasting here on our drum roasters?
Yeah, so let's talk about this in terms of an analogy of baking a cake. I think it's really easy. It's the same basic principles. So when you bake a cake, you have to set the oven to the right start temperature. And a lot of times, you know, the oven might be off or your preset's off a little bit. So say you have to start it at 400. You have to start baking the cake at 400 degrees. If it's too hot, it's going to cook too quick. If it's too cool, it's going to take too long. And then when you put it in, the first thing that happens is the water evaporates out of that cake. So it starts to build up the structure. The same thing happens in the green coffee. That water starts to evaporate. And then what you need to do is you need to make sure you either maintain that environment or you push it a little hotter, a little cooler. And then that cake is done at an ideal time. It's usually time versus temperature. Like, it hits that maximum point, and that's when you want to take it out of the oven. If you take it out too soon, it's kind of mushy inside. We call this in coffee underdeveloped. It still tastes like green coffee. It's kind of grassy, kind of grainy. It's not good. Or if you leave that cake in the oven too long, it starts to dry out. The carbon takes over that flavor. It loses a lot of the characteristics on it. When you do this with coffee, we call this baking, and the same thing happens. Like, a lot of the sugars, a lot of the acidities just dissipate, and you get this kind of cereally tasting coffee. It's no good. And I know this happens a lot with home roasters because there's a lot of home roasting equipment that's just one temperature. Turn it on. The roast can go for 30 minutes. You're like, hey, dude, I still haven't hit second crack yet. Man, it's hard to do that. So it takes a lot of experimentation. But, yeah, so drop temperature, watching water evaporate, kind of looking at color changes, and then making sure you hit your ideal bake temp.
It sounds exactly like I'm a big home cook. Like, I'm a foodie. I eat a lot at home. And I've learned the same thing when you're cooking. Like, you need good equipment, and you need to understand how to run your cooking equipment. And if you have good pots and pans and you understand how to run your oven, your food's going to turn out really well. And the same parallel is exactly true with coffee. Like, if you know how to use whatever apparatus you have. And when I was traveling in Central America, we actually had some pretty decent coffee that was roasted in a frying pan. So they must have figured it out. Maybe they had like cast iron or something with even heat on it. And I was super surprised. Like, how'd you roast this? Oh, I roasted this on the frying pan on the stove. I'm like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But they must understand the variables. But yeah, understanding how to control those and reading them really well are super important.
One thing I want to do is evaluate these methods and just talk through, like we did sort of with brew methods 2 weeks ago, is what are the pros and cons of each one? And we can start with this sort of frying pan on the stovetop method. And I think the biggest pro is it's super easy. Everybody has this equipment. But maybe the biggest con is it's like trying to saute meat, make sure it's evenly cooked all the way through. With a coffee bean, that's super important because you don't want a charred outside and an underdeveloped inside.
Totally. Super. Yeah, that's totally observant. Like, there's so many frying pans out there that if you throw a piece of anything on your griddle, you turn it upside down, you notice that there's burnt areas on some parts of the, like, let's say a pancake. Parts of it will be burnt, parts of it will be raw. That tells you your pan is not even. If you're throwing coffee on there, the same thing's going to happen. And, of course, good cookware is expensive. So, yeah, it's totally, and you're dealing with an oven that's variable. Some ovens are very underpowered, some are overpowered. So there's no like, one formula you could give for roasting like that at home.
Then if we're going to make a step up, you still on the stovetop to Sam, what you were using, the Whirly Pop, we do pick up some benefits with this. One of those would be just a little bit better heat distribution. Sam, walk us through how exactly you would use a Whirly Pop.
I would try to heat it up for like half a minute just to ensure that like the the apparatus which you are roasting in is relatively heated up, and then you'd weigh out maybe an ounce, 2 ounces, three, maybe four if you're really trying to push it, and then just put it in, turn it on, and then shake. Like, and it sounds super, super Neanderthal, and it is pretty hilarious to watch. like, you get good coffee out of it. The first time I sipped the coffee out of a Whirly Pop, I was legitimately surprised that, like, I roasted that coffee.
You know, we were just down at CoffeeCon this weekend, and there's some guys doing some pretty amazing home roasting demos outside. And someone had, like, an automated Whirly Pop going there with a heat source outside. It was so cool to watch that. And be able to get decent coffee out of it. Totally. And he had it hooked up with thermocouples and everything, too. Yeah, so yeah. Super geeked out.
And another method related to popcorn as well is just your normal air popper. And this is where I think a lot of people end up starting is because they hear, you know, with these air poppers, you turn it on, it blows hot air around the beans, and anybody can roast coffee that way. And the biggest pro of this would be it's pretty cheap, and a lot of people just have a popcorn air popper laying around at home. But a con to this method would be that it really kind of goes against the roast theory that we've learned helps develop a great cup of coffee. And I think it does that by the fact that it doesn't start hot enough.
Totally. Yeah, I would say the overdevelopment, like what Christian was talking about in terms of baking, like, is so representative of the home roast market. Because if you enjoy a cup of coffee from a person who home roasts, I almost guarantee that, like, half of the time, you'll get a completely overdeveloped cup of coffee. And I am just as guilty. Like, I have done pounds and pounds of just way overdeveloped coffee. And the second you taste it, it's like, oh, this is like frosted mini wheats in liquid form. Because it is. It's super cereal-like. And it has this bran oat weird quality to it that is just not coffee.
Yeah, it's so disheartening when you get this green coffee sample you're so excited about. You take it home. You throw it in. It's starting to go. It's like, oh, it's kind of changing colors. So it's losing chaff a little bit. Oh, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. When's first crack going to happen, guys? With that hot air popper, what I've found, this is actually how I started roasting too at home, and I just bought it from Salvation Army for $3. If you preheat that thing a little bit and you do like a sacrifice batch, like we do at the start of our roast when we're on our little sample roaster too, get it up to temp and you can actually do a roast in 6 or 7 minutes. And this is actually very similar to, there's a roaster in Kansas City called The Roastery that runs on a large air roaster like this. So they do make industrial size air roasters, and you can roast your batches pretty quickly because it's pretty even heat. And I think the most important thing with this air roaster is to not put too much coffee in the chamber at any given time, because otherwise there's so much thermal mass there, it's going to take forever for it to heat up.
Hmm. So you'll probably want to operate, after having preheated your air popper, use a batch of somewhere around just 120 grams, enough to give you probably 2 V60 brews when you're done. It's not going to leave you much coffee, but it'll help promote a more even roast and make sure that you get even heat distribution within the bean, having preheated your roaster. Or your popper, I guess, in this case. And another... Go
ahead. A couple helpful hints too. Make sure you have some kitchen mitts around when you're using the air popper, because it gets really hot, so is that lid. Also, have a bowl around to catch the chaff. If you've never roasted before, the first time you roast, you'll figure out what chaff is pretty quickly. It's a bunch of like little husky stuff that comes off when you're roasting. And thirdly, you want to have like a nice metal bowl to dump that coffee into and stir it vigorously in front of a window, and make sure you're not near a smoke detector, because it will go off and your upstairs neighbors will not be happy.
Yeah. So be careful with this.
Absolutely.
Popcorn popper is not built to roast coffee. You can do it, but I just feel like we need to put some sort of legal disclaimer in here.
One of my most vivid memories is I started roasting in like October of last year.
and so, 2 years ago?
Yeah. Okay. And so I was roasting during the winter, and I, like, clear as day, I remember me standing outside with a fan pointed outside, and I was, like, holding the coffee in front of a window, standing in snow, like, just trying to cool it as fast as possible. And, like, coffee was good, though, so worth it.
Yeah. Coffee geeks will do a lot for good coffee. One thing that's made actually for roasting that kind of follows this sort of roast profiling, which I would maybe caution to avoid, is what I mentioned earlier, the Fresh Roast SR500. Because it starts, or it can start, and I've seen it used this way, normally people just put the coffee in and turn it on. The problem with that is it just uses air and it's going to take forever to heat up, and so it takes forever for the coffee to roast. You can probably preheat this thing just like or run a waste batch just like Christian mentioned, like you would do with a hot air popper. That'll probably make your cup a lot better. There's still not a lot of control here, though, with this fresh roast. You don't have temperature control. You're mainly going by sight and feel. You can time it as best you can, but without that sort of temperature control or eye on those roasting variables, you're not going to get a consistent cup.
Yeah, believe it or not, Stone Creek back in the day used to do our sample roasting on a similar roaster, the Nesco CR1010. Same kind of apparatus. So you just dump the coffee in. There's a little agitator, which is pretty cool. But it heats up when it's going. It's kind of one temperature. Some of the roasts can get to be about 20 minutes long. It has a cooling cycle on it, which I didn't really like, and it got super hot. It burned my hands a bunch of times. Just be careful.
So for either that fresh roast or that Nesco, you're looking at dropping about $170. Save your money, and we would recommend trying to go to something that is a little bit more consistent and then operates within the roast theory that we've come to discover works. And what Sam is using now is a little bit closer to that sort of roast profile, and that's the line from Baymore. Sam, tell us a little bit more about how those roasters work.
It, I believe, is a 1600-watt halogen lamp, and that is what heats the moving drum.
So it's like an easy-bake oven for coffee.
Exactly.
Sweet.
Exactly. A super powerful easy-bake oven. And on the actual panel itself, you have a bunch of different profiles, A, B, C, D, and I believe E and F, and those represent different bean densities. So if you're dealing with a super dense Ethiopian coffee versus a super low density Central American or South American coffee like that, you can kind of adjust to hopefully account for those differences in density. I've more played around with the power setting and then the actual batch setting. So it has like a quarter, half, and full pound setting. I almost never use the full pound setting because you're not giving yourself enough time to really adequately roast that amount of coffee. And I found even on the quarter pound batches, you're almost better using the half pound batch and just cutting it way short. And then relying way more on first crack. In addition to that, it very much is kind of like a Ronco oven set it and forget it appliance that has pros and cons. Obviously, never leave your roaster unattended. That's a super bad idea.
Sure.
But it's very much like a press one button, and then you can add or subtract time, and then it hits your cooling cycle. And I found that I wanted more flexibility, and what that meant is getting a thermocouple, which is basically just a super fancy thermometer, super temperature accurate, sticking the probe directly adjacent to the actual drum itself, and then every 30 seconds just writing down the temperature in question. And then you can really start to screw around with the power settings in terms of that being represented in the temperature.
Which that follows the roast theory that we use at Stone Creek, is that every roast cycle it operates on a curve. You start at a temperature, you introduce your beans, that drops the drum temperature, but you're trying to ride a certain curve of heat and airflow in order to achieve your ultimate roast time and roast level. Sam is doing with introducing the thermometer is just trying to track that drum and air temperature to represent and achieve in the bean as best he can what we do and are able to track very visually and with a tremendous amount of accuracy on our Dietrich roasters here at the factory.
What's interesting is we've actually set up extra thermocouples on our large roasters so we can track different kinds of temperatures, like bean temperature, so what the bean looks like, and then the environment. And I know some people set up exhaust temps. And what it does is just gives you a better picture of what the roaster is doing at any given time. We've actually thought about trying to hook up an infrared. I think Jason, our maintenance guy, has a master plan for infrared scanners on the drum at some point, which is kind of cool. But what's really important is that you're just tracking how your roast is developing. And even if you have a home popper or something like that, if you have a really nice home thermometer or kitchen thermometer, you could probably just use that. It'll work just fine. Thermocouples are also pretty cool to play around with. And if you can mod out your home popcorn machine, it's pretty sweet.
I'm looking forward to seeing somebody do something with their oven because I feel like that might be the best, in theory, the best way to roast coffee if you had some way of keeping it turning. Because, totally. I mean, Christian, what's our drop temperature on just an average batch of coffee? What are we going
for? We usually start at about 420 degrees Fahrenheit.
Which is hard to control on a stovetop and almost impossible sort of to achieve with an air popper, which is constantly blowing air out of the top. But if you have an oven and some way of turning the coffee within that, you might be able to achieve a more even roast. And you would definitely be able to control the air temperature within the oven. The problem, of course, like I said, is just getting that coffee moving to ensure an even cook.
You should also, I'm Googling as we're chatting here, and I'm finding directions on how to roast in an oven, and they bring up a good point. You probably want a convection oven, not just a standard oven, so you're moving the air inside of it.
Definitely.
They tend to bake a little bit more evenly.
I've heard that electric, for the most part, it just moves around way too much in terms of temperature. And so you almost are better off doing it on the stovetop if you have an electric. But if you do have gas, then you might be able to take advantage of more consistent temperature. But then, as Drew said, the agitation is key.
Yeah, you have to agitate. And the problem with like opening your oven and just moving the beans around on a cookie sheet like you do with your French fries is that you lose all of your air temperature the minute you do that, and then your time becomes kind of impossible to keep consistent. So if any of you have a hack for roasting in an oven that allows for even cooking, the theory matches up if we can just get the agitation right. So please share.
And that brings an interesting point up because I've heard people doing like commercial scale operations of roasting coffee on a propane grill. And so like that is a logical extension kind of like using the oven.
But I feel like we should have some sort of contest with give somebody a grill and say you have 24 hours and these tools to make a coffee roaster. Let's see who can make the best one. But a grill is interesting, especially propane, because you have a pretty good degree of control. The heat structure is right. Like, so in a grill, you have this radiating heat if you can limit the amount of conductive heat that you've got going on, so you're not searing the bean too bad before you actually cook it all the way through. So if you have a rotating drum within your grill, your propane grill, that would be a pretty sick roasting apparatus if you can track temperature on that, which you could do with a thermocouple.
When I've heard some like legendary hacks as in terms of like modding your propane grill, so I've heard of people installing like ceramic tiles in the bottom to try to act very much like an industrial roaster. So you're heating up the tiles, and then the tiles in turn are heating the roaster drum, and then they just use a rotisserie spit hooked up to basically like a drum apparatus that you can buy on like eBay or something like that.
Nice.
And then the thermometer, like. And I've also heard of people using bathroom duct fans hooked up to the bottom of the grill to try to simulate the exhaust system and airflow and all that sort of stuff. I wonder whether the roasts are amazing or not, but the idea is totally solid. The theory is solid. The execution, that's really where it becomes questionable, I suppose.
I mean, it just depends on how geeky you want to get with
totally.
It. I mean, like, coffee roasters, especially home roasters, are a unique breed, and some people get more into it than others. occasionally people, when they've just got an extra lot of money lying around.
$12,500 is the quote I just looked up for the IR1.
Just pocket change.
1 kilo Diedrich roaster.
Yeah, so if you want a small roaster that you can run, what kind of electric wattage does that run on?
I don't know.
I don't think it just plugs into an outlet.
Well, you need gas.
Oh, that too.
You need gas or propane.
So if you're a super geek and you've got a lot of money and you want to hire somebody to do some plumbing / gassing for you, you can buy what we use to profile roast our coffees, a small Diedrich IR1. And Christian said it's to the tune of some $12,000. Forget the Camry. Just tell your wife, no, we'll buy a beater car. I want to get this little roaster. It'll be worth it.
We're saving money, honey. Yeah,
right.
We're saving like $5 every time we buy coffee.
How long would that take to pay out? Like, if you're just one person at home? A long time.
The way that I look at like a $500 roaster is like a year or two. So that's many a year.
You could buy 833 $15 pounds. You could buy 833 pounds of coffee for $15 a pound at that that kind of roaster. All
right.
So you're saving money maybe in the 10-year track.
If you give it to your 15? Grandkids.
That's if your roaster holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah, no maintenance.
All right, so just to kind of recap and review, definitely a lot of ways to roast coffee at home. Just make sure if you're using some sort of popcorn popper method that you're preheating what you're using to roast. I mean, ideally you would have an air temperature of 400. You're probably not going to achieve that at home unless you're using something like the IR1. So preheat as best you can. Try and get good airflow, which will promote more even cooking, for lack of a better term, of the bean. And then try and make sure that you're using a roast batch that is conducive to your roast method. If you're using the air popper, a popcorn air popper, you're probably not going to be able to get away with a very big batch. So as much as you can, if you really want to get into it, try and invest in one of the small home drum roasters. Drum-ish. So the Gene coffee roaster, the Bmore series, and then the
hot top roaster.
So and for one of those roasters that's actually made for roasting, you're going to be looking somewhere between $300, $600, $700, which is a big investment, but if you're really into it and want to move past the popcorn apparatus, that's probably the way to go.
Makes great Christmas gifts as well, or any holiday season.
Are you hinting to your family? If you're Sam's family right now,
I can use two of them.
So that's going to wrap us up for today. Sam, thanks for coming on the podcast and sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Next time, we're going to tackle probably what makes baristas seem more snotty at times than at others. That would be flavor notes in coffee. You see them in wine. Wine sommeliers make a living off seeming prudish. But we throw these flavor notes around on the bags here at Stone Creek, and a lot of companies do this. Walnut, tangerine, cherry. You'll see this stuff show up, whereas at times people may say, well, coffee tastes like coffee. All coffee is the same. Well, it's not. And it's not just because we say we're tasting something different or we say we're tasting this fruit or that fruit. It's not all the same because of its chemical makeup. And certain chemicals, certain compounds in coffee make it taste different at times. And there's a difference in compounds and chemical makeup between coffee varieties that promote for these differences in flavor. So we're going to talk through a little bit about that. We'll try not to get too over the top. Keep it tangible. Keep it accessible for just your average coffee person.
Was it Jesse Jeff keeping it real? Yeah, that's us. We got to keep it real.
Flavor notes next time on the podcast. Till then, we are geeks.
And we're talking coffee.